Hi, I'm Chris, CodePoet on Twitter. I'm blogging at waittilli.com, and I'm always on the Freenet channel HTML5 in case you need me on IRC, for those people who have been around for a long time and know what IRC is. The slides are already online, so before that's the first question, like it always is at the end of the conference. So these things are Creative Commons. You can reuse them, you can use them, you can abuse them and translate them. I'm very happy to be back in Canada because it's actually a really cool country. I mean, Wolverine is from here. That's cool. And everybody I know that is a developer from Canada had actually some really, really cool stuff to tell. One thing I want to talk about and I want us to remember today is I'm not going to give much technical data because you had a whole day of information gathering already. You've been drinking. And frankly, it's just not good at the end of the day. My job is to entice you to do more drinking. And that's why I was wondering about, we should start thinking about what we've been doing in the last few years, because I've been doing web development for a long time, and I think we lost a bit the plot about what we're going to do here. When I started as a web developer, 1996, 1997 in Germany, I went there and said, like, I want to make a web design company. And the first question was like, is this something for art? Do you make webs? Do you knit something? And I'm like, well, artists don't pay tax. Yeah, it's art. It's really. But then they were like, you use computers, so it can't be art. And I'm like, you know, but that's exactly what it was back then. And we called it the new media. And we forgot about this. Right now, we're going backwards in time, putting like all this streaming video and TV stuff on the web and calling it innovation. We were the read-write media. When you thought back then, people had a real confusing moment about this, like what the whole web surfing is about. That was the kind of information stuff that you saw online, and people surfed on these keyboards. That was really cool. So we are there to replace the old media. We're there to replace TV and audio and radio and newspapers and make it more interactive, make it more interesting. And right now people get very excited about like, oh, I can watch TV on demand on my internet connection, rather than like I could comment on this TV on demand and my comment would show up with my friends when they watch the same show. These kind of things we don't do anymore, which is rather annoying to me. So HTML5 is tech revolution and evolution in action. That's what it's about. It's not about that some cool people now use HTML5 where you poor guys have to use a content management system that doesn't support it yet. It's about taking what we do and making the next step out of it. Be like, make our website these X-Men of the old websites. And we have to do that by taking a step back and analyzing what we've done in the past and making it better now. And not being afraid of evolution, not being afraid of doing new things we hadn't done before. I remember, so 1997, 1998, people went nuts. They had no idea what a website looks like or what a website should do. So we overdid it. We had the old DHTML days where like a little button on the corner and then it turns into this floating menu and like let people try to find the content and it's more a game than really a council website. But it didn't work out back then, but at least we played with the media and we didn't fall back into like, this is the template, this is what you install, this is the content management system, put some colors on it, this is a website, sell it. That's why we're losing against the other internet-connected markets right now, and I'm going to come back to that later. The internet itself is a much more flexible internet experience that we do right now. Right now you go to a website, you fill something out, you send something out there, and you're done. To me, a website should learn from what I've been doing. If I went there 5 days in a row and I did the same 10 steps five times, it should give me a shortcut button and say like, hey, we analyzed what you've been doing. Do you want to have a shortcut to this? Because this seems to be the task you're doing over and over again. The systems that we put on the web are not set in stone. It's just annoying that when you work in an agency and you have an upgrade plan of 3 years or something like that for every product. Our system should be web-based, and if there is a fix, it can be applied across the platform without having to reinstall and uninstall and do all these kind of things. So every computer is connected. Every system gets data from the internet to improve the system itself. And we should not be tied back to like uninstalling an application and installing an application or a patch and having to wait for that. And it's just, we're not there yet because we're too scared of the cloud. We're too scared of putting our data out there. We put everything on our own server and then we wonder when we get a pitch from TechCrunch or some other sites that our servers go down and we're like, okay, what do we do here? My whole career, I spread my own content on the web as far as I could. Everywhere. I don't care if somebody puts it on their blog. It's Creative Commons. I have it copyrighted for myself that way. And I don't mind if you translate it and change it. If you find my screenshots of my presentations on Flickr and click through them to SlideShare and from there to my blog, I found somebody who didn't go to my blog up front. He found me through the web, and I updated my content through the web as well. And that's something we should be thinking about. The other thing that annoys me a bit is that we stopped dreaming about awesome computers. Like, when you look at the 1950s, 60s science fiction movies, they all had these ubiquitous computing things. You know, you just waved your hand and the computer did something for you. And we gave up on that. We basically said, like, well, my MacBook does this, and the PC does this, and I have to upgrade to do that. We just gave up on ubiquitous computing being this thing that we should have. That, I mean, there's this Tumblr thing about internet on a fridge, like pictures from the last 20 years when every time somebody talked about innovation and there's going to be a fridge with a computer interface on it. Is this really how far we go in our imagination what computers should be like? Like, it tells me when I'm out of beer? That's really not what a computer should be like. And if you look at the if you look at the systems that we had in science fiction movies, this is from the 13th floor, where basically you connect yourself to the computer and in there you are in a virtual world and you basically have a different life. And this is partly what it could be. When we stop thinking about computer systems as set in stone and allow them to evolve and change over time and change constantly. We're always afraid of changing an interface and people are like, oh God, we're going to annoy every one of our users if we change the interface. We're going to lose them, we're going to lose our job and end up in the gutter and be dead. And you look at Facebook, you do it at Twitter, they don't care about this. Facebook pissed off every user with every single interface change. And 2 weeks later, nobody cared anymore. Voice recognition. I mean, this is from the Star Trek movie, when in the Enterprise, you select computer, and the computer says, yes, please tell me what you want to have. The computer is my slave. The computer is the person or the thing that does the job for me. And we forgot about this. We became the slave of the computer by now. Like, oh, I have to have the new iPad because I want to play this game. No, that game should be available for the old iPad as well. I shouldn't have to consume and buy new things just to be part of the cool kids around. So we pushed the computing revolution into commercialism by now by making systems that sell hardware. I never, for example, got into gaming on PCs because I didn't want to buy a new video card for every new game that came out. That, to me, sounded like a scam. So I didn't bother, and I only play Tetris and Angry Birds, so it really doesn't matter. But voice recognition, for example, I've got the Nexus One mobile phone, and in England, when I got a data plan that doesn't fleece me like I have over here, I actually have it connected with my headset, and I cycle. And I say, it's Piccadilly Circus, and it tells me, do you mean this Piccadilly Circus, or this? And then I say, yeah, the first one. And it tells me where to drive. I don't have to look on my mobile phone on my bicycle, which would be a shit idea, let's face it. But hearing it, I actually have Star Trek voice recognition already in my pocket from a phone that I got free from a company because I gave a talk there. And that's just awesome. And it gets me excited that some of the 1960s, 1980s sci-fi stuff that we talked about back then is already there on an open platform as well. This is the other cool thing. I mean, I don't want to start iTunes to put one song on my mobile phone. I'm happy to have my mobile phone connected and be another hard drive. That's cool. That's exactly what I wanted. Then, of course, there's the holodeck in Star Trek New Generation, which would not happen. It will not. Not because technically not possible, but because people would die in there because they just use it for having sex. They will forget about eating, they will forget about everything else because it's so much easier than having real life. We would just stay in the holodeck. And that doesn't help us. This is what's called television watching and believing and actually getting frustrated that you're not the people on television. The other big thing, of course, was Minority Report. It was the big breakthrough when you had this interface where, like, oh, well, you shifted shit around and moved stuff and totally stupid interface because you do that all day long and your arms will be like this. Then I realized this is Tom Cruise. So the interface is actually on this height. I can sit down and use that, which makes more sense again. Then there was Iron Man, of course, which was another great, great movie. And it had so many features I really want to play with. I really want to get into and have fun with. Like this mobile phone that he had, like the little glass interface where he looked at the screens and started controlling them. Who's seen Iron Man 2? Cool. You call yourself geeks, the ones that didn't. Anyways, you just look through that and control the screens from it. And you can do that now as well with the iPad controlling your TV screen. That's already working. But that was really, really cool. Then it had this 3D scanner tool that you can build things in and put your hand in and turn it around and see it how it's working. That's something I want to play with as well. Then it had this touch interface table, which was much like the Surface, but much slicker and much nicer. I want to play with that as well. And then there was Scarlett Johansson, of course. And then it got sour. Then it turned bad, because then every movie just started getting sponsored by companies. And you had these product placements. You had like the Saint up there, where the Nokia communicator was 17 times in the movie. And it was never a good phone. But it saved his life. He was like in Russia in a lake, and he almost died. And like, he died of hypothermia, and the communicator still worked. Yeah, sure. Last James Bond, Sony Vaio screens everywhere, like a Sony Ericsson phone while he was driving, showing him some driving instructions and stuff. It's just sad that we now came back to commercialism about it rather than dreaming up new interfaces in movies. And that was the 60s and 70s. It was much cooler. And it brings me to the web as well, because people are very tainted about the web and saying, like, well, websites, yeah, this is what we do in content management system. It's boring. If you want to be innovative, if you want to be a startup that everybody loves, apps is the new thing. Applications are where it's at. And it's true. You make the most money with a 99-cent app right now. You get known the best. That's why we have 37 fart noise generators on the iPhone. I'm quite sure that the iPhone engineers thought exactly about that when they came up with the iPhone. I hope that somebody builds something that makes fart noises with that. iPhone people must be even more frustrated, because the first iPhone came out with a really, really bad camera. No other mobile phone company would have gotten away with that. The second one now had a really okay camera. And what does everybody do? Takes Instagram pictures that look like a 1970s camera. So if I were the engineer that had to put that camera in there, I would be really, really annoyed. And applications to me are a great idea, but I feel the scaling already not working. You have this interface and you have like 10,000 apps. Where was it? Where is it going? That was bad in Finder. That was bad in Windows Explorer. And you also have to deinstall and uninstall them. And every time there's an upgrade, you download the whole app. And that to me doesn't make any sense. Like this morning, it said like, oh, you have to upgrade some of your apps on your phone. And I'm on the data plan here. I'm not going to allow you to upgrade 5 MB just because they have another level of Angry Birds. I haven't finished the last one. So with a website or a web application and local storage, I wouldn't have to do that. So I don't see the revolution, but other people do. This was Robert Scoble on his blog when Nokia announced that they're partnering with Microsoft on their phones now, and that they're switching from Symbian to something that people can develop in. And he was going really excited about it. He's like, nothing matters in this world more than apps. Write that on your forehead. Write it on the mirror of your bathroom wall. Write that on your car windshield. Whatever it takes so you remember it. HP XX notice, Google XX notice. Everybody in Silicon Valley knows this. Apps are the only thing that matters now. And this is the kind of stuff you hear at entrepreneur conferences. Nobody talks about the web anymore. Everybody's like, build this app, you're the killer app, you do some really cool things. Wouldn't it be cool to have a killer app, like a database of mass murderers? That'd be really awesome. Nobody does that yet. Just an idea. And my favorite sentence in his blog post was, I come from the future and I know you don't like to be dragged into it. And that reminded me of Terminator 2, like, come with me if you want to live. And I just don't buy it yet. I don't think that the future is little apps that we uninstall and deinstall. I think the web and applications can live aside next to each other because we can use the same technologies to actually build them rather than just going to like writing things for iPhone, then things for Android, then things for Symbian, not anymore, then things for Windows Phone, and so on and so forth. We should chill about this. Things can live next to each other. There's not a problem with an app being a website as well. And I think we should start building single-use websites, like small websites that do one single task that are really, really snappy, really fast, that could be cached locally instead of just having an application that you have to install and deinstall again. We always make the mistake, as soon as we start a website, we make it much too complex than it should be. It's like every time I do something with a client, they want a login form. They want to control the data that people come in there. And they never do anything with that information except for not telling people that password is not a good password. And websites can be as flimsy as applications. They can do only one task. And I ask you to build some of those, because then we can repackage them as applications simply as well. Google even released an app for that on Google App Engine called AppMater, that you just put a URL and it packages up as an HTML app that you can send to your Android phone, all automatically. So take a look at these technologies. It's actually quite fun. What fascinates me is that in real life, upgrading is a good thing. Like, nobody complains when you check in at the airport and she says, like, well, I upgraded to business class for free. No, I don't want that. Don't do that to me, you know? Like, when you get an upgrade on your hardware, you get a new mobile phone rather than the old one. No, keep the old one, the new one, I keep the old one. It's really, really cool to wait for stuff. That's not what we do. But with HTML5, we do. A lot of people are like, no, I don't want to change. I don't want this stuff to do. I wrote HTML4 for such a long while, and I fought browsers and Internet Explorer for so long that I really, really don't want to upgrade and learn more. I see a lot of stagnation in web development right now. And it's partly understandable, because people want to stay in the comfort zone. Better the devil you know. We fixed this stupid problem 5 times already. We want to fix it again. We don't want to learn about new problems. We don't want to do things until they're 100% supported. There's no 100% support in software ever. Software is a living thing that changes constantly, and you will have to work around issues. So I think we shouldn't be afraid of change. If you think HTML5 is scary, and you fight left, right, and center and say, like, well, it doesn't work on this browser yet or that browser yet, so I'm not going to use it, that's not helping evolution. That's just making sure that we will be overtaken by people that build little fart applications and make money for that. And it just happens already. And that's why we have these websites out there that still look like this in Yahoo in 2003. It's like, yeah, okay, we have it out of the box. The template comes with the content management system. Just send it out to the client, make it a bit pretty, put rounded corners on there, make it really modern. Maybe some drop shadow. Just go wild with like a gradient in the background. But it's still the same thing. It's still the same website. And it just annoys me that people go in back into that comfort zone all the time rather than just playing with the web for a change. So I'm still waiting for the closed web revolution. I've been around for long enough to see like Vrml, who remembers that, VRML, and Java applets, and iPix plugins, and Shockwave, and all these things that promised us the new web to be much better and much cooler because HTML and browsers suck and it's really hard to make a website. And they were all right at that time. It was, browsers were bad, they were terrible. Some of them are still around. So we had all these really cool things like graphing tools in this case I think it was Flash, that actually gave you instant graphs of like when you clicked on a table. And then you had audio editing in Flash, and you had these really cool interactive maps in Silverlight. And this is all great, and this is all showcases. And I went to clients back then when I worked for an agency and showed this kind of stuff, and they're like, that's exactly what we want, but that's a plugin. We can't do this because we're a financial institution. And you're like, that's just, you know, I want to have this web, because that's cool for end users. And this is what we should be thinking about, not like what security audit or what audit we are allowed, which software to be used. So whenever people bitch about saying Flash is dead and Silverlight is dead, I'm actually bored of this because Flash, Silverlight, Flex, and Air are great examples of what the web can be. They're great examples of what we should be doing, actually, and we're too afraid of doing it because we didn't have the native way of doing it, and now we have it. We have the same technologies to build these really cool interfaces that got discarded a few years ago because people didn't want to use another environment. Flex was supposed to take down Java. Well, how well did that work? Sadly enough, people just don't want to change their infrastructure, and that's where we're coming in right now. That's where the open web comes in and the open tech revolution comes in. Because you don't need to send people to a training course. You don't need to buy an extra server that you don't have before. You don't need to buy a IDEs for everybody to build things. With HTML5, we're building on the existing infrastructure, which is the browser. It's just the fact that you can't use the internet without a browser. All you have to do is upgrade the browser to have the newest technologies out there, and you don't have to touch your server, you don't have to touch the editor that you want to use. People can use whatever they want, VI, Emacs, and fight with each other, Visual Studio if you like booting up screens. these kind of things. And it's cool, because again, the 13th floor is like when he realizes, so he's at the end of that road, and then he realizes the whole road is simulated. And that's the same thing we're doing with browsers. It's an infrastructure that fixes itself and changes itself. Imagine having a road with a pothole. You report it. Next time you drive over it, the pothole is not there anymore. That's exactly what we do with browsers. Browsers are the streets of the internet, and we can upgrade them to be slicker, faster, use less petrol, make it really interesting for us. And you don't really need to have be somebody special to learn about this and to hear about it. The Hypertext Application Technology mailing list, where's where HTML5 happens. HTML5 in the HTML sense, the living document. HTML5, what the W3C does, is snapshots of that, that takes the best of it and tests it properly and does cool things with it. You can see like the HTML5 working group as like the playground outside where kids go nuts and get very creative, and the W3C is the teachers inside the school that then turn into curriculum. I think that's pretty cool that they can work together that way. And so let's not be afraid of this. Let's take a few steps to a better web. Let's be part of this whole conversation, because you can right now. Nothing is hidden. And the first step that I learned about this is I want to stop thinking in limits. Everything we do is driven by limits. Like, will that work with our user base? Will that work in Internet Explorer 6? Will that fit my screen? And we should just start discarding these ideas a bit and thinking about where can we go further. This is in Hong Kong, by the way. This is the official sign that says, like, you have to be this tall to ride without your parents. And I have to say that anybody with a cool giraffe like that can do whatever they want. They don't need parents. I really, really love that sign. And I wish in the rest of the world we had more of these things as well. One limit I always hear in design conferences especially is that people are getting very excited about web fonts right now. We have all the fonts in the world now to use on our website so we can make them look like print designs. And you're like, no, we tried that so many years ago. Okay, I understand that human psychology, print design works. A good designer knows how to actually make something look good, and it works for people and they feel comfortable. But we don't have a fixed space here. We have a browser that we don't know the size of. We can scroll in each direction if we want to. If we just get away with the idea of making it look as good as a newspaper and say, like, why shouldn't newspapers evolve? Look at the Harry Potter movies, the Daily Prophet with the moving pictures and the headlines changing and these kind of things. That is pretty cool. This is what a newspaper should be looking like these days, but on paper you can't do that. On the web you can. So maybe it's time we just discard this idea of that only print design is good design and try out interaction design. And it's already happening. People do like websites that change according to your resolution properly. People do websites that change the orientation of your mobile phone and you see them differently. And we embrace the flexibility of the web rather than shoehorning some old technology and old design ideas into it. A website can be an application. Google Docs. I mean, I use it for everything by now. I'm totally fine with that. And this is the same technology as HTML, CSS, JavaScript. Don't let anybody tell you something different. This is a website. This could be having that data as a data table. If the browser doesn't support it, and if the browser supports it, it becomes this editable Excel-style application. And I think that's very important to get this kind of stuff. Yeah, this is Nike Better World, and it really blew me away. Because not that Nike tells us to have a better world, which is rather scary, actually. But this is what that website looks like. So it looks like a cool iPad interface, and all these like parallax stuff going on, and it's really beautiful if you look at it, and you see it moving, and you have video embedding, you can reload parts of the content in there. So they got away with all the like PS5 columns with information. Let's give people as much information as you can above the fold, which doesn't exist, but actually entice people to scroll around and find things in there. And this would have been a year ago, 2 years ago, this would have been Flash or Silverlight. And as you look at it right now, it is actually HTML5. So if you scroll this, it shows you how many pixels you scroll. Totally pointless, but quite cute at the end. You're at the end of your story. And if you look at the source code, it has all the HTML5 goodness in there you can think of. And you can actually copy and paste that and try it out yourself. Play with it. Do this back in the days, never had the FLA file of Nike, did we? But looking at the source code in HTML5, we can actually replicate this stuff, play with it, do it ourselves, not resell it the same way and restyle it with Reebok. That would be not nice. But they're the same company, I think, so it doesn't matter. But it's just great to have this resource stuff, seeing everything, how it's working, and helping it to fix it as well. If it's buggy, you can try it out yourself. You can send it back to them with an FLA or a Swift or a Silverlight, whatever it is. We wouldn't be able to do that. So the second step is to really use what the client offers. We released this a few days ago. This is the HTML5 dashboard that shows you all the features in HTML5 and friendly technologies with HTML5 that the browser can do. And it's an interactive thing. You can look at each of these parts and see them running in your browser. And you should be using these things because they're there. Okay, they might not work for everybody, but we're going to come back to that. It's just such a wonderful... When I had started in the web and I had had these technologies, I would be like, oh, this is amazing. Not like, how do I make these 5 pixels not look bad? Rather than like, I can embed video. Today on Smashing Magazine, I have an article, how to sync HTML content with video to make the video the control of your content rather than controlling the video with your content like we always do. And that's just changing HTML on your page, saying like, at that second show this, at that second show that. That's really easy to do. And it's about thinking about what in the future we want to do and how we want to do it. And again, I'm coming back to original Star Trek here. Like, if you need an alien dog and you don't have one, why don't you put like a furry coat on it and a horn? I mean, this looks incredibly ridiculous, but nobody cared when they watched the TV show because it was like just a part in the set in the back. Like, yeah, there's an alien dog. Cool. They're on a different planet right now. The best story about Star Trek is not that Shatner's Canadian, but that the whole transporter thing was only invented because the first pilot movie had to come out. They had a fixed date when the movie had to come out, and they didn't have the prop for the landing craft, the Galileo, yet. That wasn't finished, so they had to find a way to get the crew down to the planet, and they invented the transporter. Because they weren't afraid of evolution. They weren't afraid of, like, yeah, that's probably possible. Let's see. Actually, we can make a storyline where people get badly transported and change, which is that episode. So they actually reuse their mistakes as well. And that's the kind of stuff we could be doing as well. So let's talk about these technologies that we have. Local storage, the end of cookies. Cookies suck. There's just no way around that. From the specification to the implementation, there's nothing clever or beautiful about cookies. It's you can store 4K in a really, really complex syntax that only PPK understands. That's why I wrote a JavaScript library around it. And every HTTP request you do on your server, whether it's an image or a document or a script, gets these few cookies with it as well. So you shift these 4K every single time you do a request, and that's just not clever. And that's where local storage comes in. Robert has shown this. Local storage is just window local storage, key value pair. You can encode it in JSON and de-encode it from JSON, and you can store up to 5 MB for every domain in a browser. There's a few things there that are still annoying, like you cannot check if the quota has been reached or not, so you have to wrap it in a try and catch error handling. But that's not a problem yet. And also, this is the kind of stuff we can feed back. Offline storage is the next thing. So instead of just having everything online, why not shift something into offline storage? Next time I open my browser on the train, the content, the interface that I had is still there. Opera did that for ages already for me as a browser, and I think more browsers should be doing it. But with offline storage, you can actually define what should be already on your computer before you go online, because I go in trains, I go in planes, and I switch from offline to online all the time. So take a look at offline storage and put some stuff in. Geolocation. Wonderful thing. Just navigate a geolocation. Tell me where the user is. The user gets asked, do you want to share your location? And if they share their location, I can get them down to the street level of where they are right now, depending where you are, not in North Korea, but in Europe for starters. And it's just wonderful. Why don't we do this with every form? Why do I have to type in my street, my country, my postcode every single time? Why don't I have a button there saying, like, find me, fill it in, and then fix the things that are wrong, rather than typing 20 things every time? Makes so much more sense, and it's 2 lines of JavaScript, and it works across all the browsers. And together with a data set like Yahoo GeoPlanet, you can actually find the hierarchy around that point as well. So there's lots of powerful things you can do with that. HTML5 video is, of course, the big thing that everybody talks about. There's a few problems with it, of course, but it's still there. This is Opera's website. I mean, I don't know Opera, I don't know television, and I'm really scared of how much impact she has in America right now. But these rollovers, if you look at them and you turn on the controls, you realize that they're actually HTML5 videos. Before that, we would have had the whole website as one massive Flash file, and somebody without Flash wouldn't be able to see that website. We would then probably try to have it as an animated GIF instead. And these are like 20K a piece rather than 500K as an animated GIF that actually looks really bad. So it's good that somebody like Opera website, I think she's ABC or something like that, actually dared to do that. And I think it's very, very powerful to use little videos that way. And it's not hard to do. And there's nothing wrong with it, because if the rollover does not show the video on Internet Explorer 6, nobody's going to cry and say, like, I would love to see these animations, because they don't expect them to happen. And that's something I will come back later to as well. There's a great product called D3.js, which just came out a few weeks ago. It's a Canvas SVG plotting platform, or like graph plotting platform, that takes data in the page. So you can have a data table in that page, an HTML table that works with a screen reader, that works with everybody out there. You put that library in there, and you pick your graph that you want to do, and this is how beautiful the outcome is. I can't design for Toffee, so I would be able to make things like that. But with a library like this and open technology like SVG and Canvas, I can actually make these things work in the browser right now without having to create a Flash movie, without having to create a Silverlight control. It's all in there, and take a look at that. Device orientation and basic accelerometer access. So always, people always think that's only for mobile phones, but you can access, for example, the accelerometer of a MacBook or a ThinkPad. And Google did this with their Jules Verne logo that they had lately, where you could shake your laptop and it would float in the logo and these kind of things. I've seen games where you can control your laptop. I see a lot of laptops breaking in the future because of that. But yeah, it's evolution. Things will break. It's all good. It's also quite funny when you see this here. I saw this on Make magazine. Somebody put like one of those clips on top of the home button so the kid can play with the iPad without going back to the home button and buying fart applications or whatever. It's a very, very simple way to secure your iPad. And touch interfaces are magical. I mean, you see kids playing with these computers or elderly people playing with these computers without being scared of them. A keyboard and a mouse always scared people. It's just not natural. It's not natural to use these things. I mean, I remember when I trained people in long, long ago on like, okay, take your mouse and move it over the screen. Tonk. Like, no, okay, let me rephrase that. And then the confusion when they reach the end of the mouse pad and like, I don't know where to go now. You know, it's amazing how many people use them wrongly for years. But a touch interface, I've seen people nowadays touch the screen in reception at Yahoo when I was still there. It was not a touch screen, but they just expected it to be a touch screen when they came in. And that's cool. That's what I want to have. That's when Nintendo whooped the ass of every other provider when they came up with the Wii. My parents would not touch computers. They scratch the magnetic stripe on the card they get from the bank because they're scared the computer steals their money. My mom goes crazy when I open the microwave when the light is still on because she thinks the radiation is coming out and kills everybody. Okay, maybe it does. There were probably movies like that out there. But I saw them playing Wii with my godson and basically bowling away. I see in America and in England, I've seen homes for the elderly. Instead of people sitting there vegetating in front of the television, they just play Wii games. Because it's a natural movement, it's the interaction of human computer, which we don't do right yet. And touch interfaces are an awesome, awesome step for that. And they will get cheaper, they will get better, and it's a wonderful idea to take the orientation of a computer and do things with it. The great thing about that one all is it's all an if-then statement. You can actually wrap everything in an if-then statement and it will not be sent to the browsers that don't get it. And that's not bad. That's not a bad idea. It's like you should not build for the newest, coolest Safari browser in the latest nightly build and then try to fix it for all the others. You just say, hey, if it has that, then do that. And there's tools like When Can I Use, which tells you which every browser supports right now, and Modernizer, which is a JavaScript that puts classes on your HTML that tell you what it's supporting. So you can say, if HTML class name local storage, then do local storage stuff. You don't have to do the clever if statements yourself anymore. Modernizer does that for you. And that's exactly what I want people to use, because I just want to test things before I apply them. It's like jumping into the river after checking it's deep enough. Probably a good idea, but not many people do it when it comes to the web. The Web of Wonder website that we just released in Mozilla is another showcase of HTML5 stuff, and it's getting more and more demos every day. And there's some really, really cool stuff in there. Take a look at that. I haven't done screencasts yet. But for example, the remixing reality thing here, these papers are actually 2D barcodes, and you can inject videos and a jumping ball from one to the other in 3D environments, and it shifts those papers around. That could be a live video from a camera as well, not a predefined video. You can do face recognition in JavaScript. You can do shape recognition in live videos in JavaScript. All that stuff is possible right now. Play with it, take a look at it. The most important part, I think, and that's what not many people talk about when it comes to HTML5, is that we should increase our vocabulary. Yes, you can have a career even if you can't string a sentence together. But if you want to get people excited about something, then you have to know the language and you have to use the right words to spark the theater in their heads. That's what you learn in radio when you work there. That's why I don't speak in French, because I don't have these words, or I pronounce them wrongly. But we don't. Right now, we say, like, HTML5 is not there yet. I'm not going to use these new things because they're not safe. They're not safe to use yet. And if you take a look at the HTML4 and HTML3 specifications, the way we talk to computers is basically grunting and pointing. There's, like, these things were built for scientific papers that link a bit to each other rather than building an interface for humans out there that are actually clever. HTML5 is a lot about moving away from documents to interfaces. And if you want to describe an interface to a computer, you have to have a better language than just the, do this. And it doesn't work that way in modern browsers because we want to do that. HTML5 specifications to 80% how to build a browser to do it right. So it's huge, it's massive, but 80% of that stuff never ever applies to you, don't care about it. But it means that every browser that comes out knows how to understand these new languages, these new words. And before that, we hope that browsers cared about them and implemented them the right way. Forms were one of the most annoying things. I mean, they were just poor and ha-ha, you can't do that kind of stuff. We had radio buttons, we had checkboxes, we had password fields, which basically showed stars, and I've seen 5 stars as people's passwords several times because that's what it shows. Select buttons, file picker, just in JavaScript, trying to find the currently selected part of a select button was always a total pain because you had to loop over the options and option selected index. And like, why was that complex? It should not have to be. But it was, and it still is. And HTML4 forms are not the forms that we need to have. Forms are much more complex than that. They're also terribly annoying. That's why I should not have to have a reload every time something goes wrong. So we discovered that before, and then we said, like, let's do XHTML. And XHTML is XML. I can extend it in any which way. It's very modular. It's very much massive DTD. It's really cool to extend things. And everybody's like, what the hell are you on about? I don't know. I don't understand a single word you're saying. And especially browsers said, like, I don't care what this XHTML thing is. I'm not going to show it. I'm not going to show it properly. So XHTML was just alien to the web because it came from XML. And if you're excited about XML and data, great. But you shouldn't put it in browsers because you expect the browser to do it right. So HTML5, in essence, is actually a debate club. It's a negotiation between the browser and the technology. And as the browsers that are built right now are based on the HTML specification and not on some random thing, it means that we will have better support for it. But we only have better support if we ask for it, and if we bitch about when it goes wrong, and we don't yet right now. Everybody goes excited about HTML5 video and Canvas, but nobody looks at forms and how they break. PPK did it yesterday for the first time, nobody else before. We got all these really cool things, section, nav, article, aside, age group, header, footer, time, mark, details, figure, fig, caption. All these things are there. They actually explain and the browser what the interface should do and what it should be like. And browsers and search engines and other things on the web don't use them yet because people don't ask for support for them, and that's what we should be doing. Right now, if I use an article element, I should have an H1 in there that tells me what the main heading and inside a header element, what the main heading of this article is. An article can be part of the main document. So you could have 300 articles in there. Like, for example, a content management system, when you have a list of all the blog posts with like a little description of what's going on there. Because the idea of an article is that it could be reused somewhere else as a widget, as an RSS entry, all these kind of things. Now, if I put a page with 300 H1s on the web, Google will probably block me as a spammer. So I'm using the real syntax. I'm using the way we should be semantically marking up pages, and I probably would get punished for that. And that's the kind of thing that I want to fix. And we have to ask Google to say, hey, you're on HTML5 company. What is your search bot doing? Does it punish me for that or not? And I asked several times and said, like, don't use too many H1s was the only answer I could find. Now, that doesn't help me. With forms, we got great stuff now. We got email. We've got URL. So that on a browser is not that fascinating, but on a mobile phone, for example, I can pick from my address or I can pick from my history rather than having to type in a whole URL with a screen keyboard, which is never fun. And voice recognition probably gets you to some website that you don't want to have. I've got a color picker, which was quite fun because the now Opera has a support for the color picker. It looks like that down there. The only browser that supported color picker before that was the BlackBerry browser. It was the only HTML element it understood. How that got into it, I really don't know, but it was quite funny to see. Date picker, yes, please. I don't want to write another calendar. Date and time was just made out there to make developers suffer. There's so many things you have to do wrong. You have to do to like leap years, leap seconds, like order of the date when it comes to it. So these things actually recognize the locale of your browser and give you the order of the date automatically that way. They work different in every browser right now, but at least we have a bloody date picker and we don't have to do them ourselves. Every text field can become autocomplete right now. We don't have to use jQuery or YUI or whatever other library for that. That is part of the spec right now. And there's cool stuff you can do with forms. You can have an input autofocus that sends the focus when it loads to the screen and makes sure you type in your password somewhere where people can see it. So autofocus, not that good. Default content, put some content in there, and we always had to do that. We always had to put some content in there and then remove it with JavaScript and then remove it again and send the page again. Browsers do it for us now. Autocomplete, the same thing. Limits and steps, if you have a number, you can say you can only choose between 1 and 300. Multiple selections for emails and our file uploads. And related elements are like output, meter, and progress. So we can write these very complex forms that we used to do in Java Swing and then in Flash and then in Silverlight. We can do that natively in the browser right now if we start complaining that they're not properly supported at the moment. So you can only ask for support if you actually start using these words. And using them in day-to-day life. And you have to use the HTML5 words in day-to-day websites before browsers really start realizing that there is a very, very important step to be taken here. Because right now, we have a lot of translation problems. We translate HTML for the browser. That we had to fix things all the time. ABBR, still not supported in Internet Explorer 9. All these things that you have out there that you have to fix, like display wrongly or elements needing injecting things for us that we don't want to have. We don't put a T-body in a table. The generated code will have a T-body in there, which can still mess up with your styling. So we started translating HTML to the browser, and that's where all these errors came the last 10 years. And as browsers now are based on the HTML5 spec, we can be much more assured that these things will be supported. Which brings me to one point that is a bit controversial, but I'm actually tired of it. We should allow technology to retire. We should allow Internet Explorer to die. Internet Explorer 6. Okay. And 6 is not dead. Don't give me that bullshit. Because the UK government announced that until 2014 is the only browser that they support on all of their websites. And that's because they bought licenses years ago that say Internet Explorer 6 is the only browser that you need to have. So there's a big problem with upgrading. But it's time, yeah, exactly. It's time to let the browser retire. I don't give somebody who is old and frail a backpack and tell them to run around in circles. And we do that with Internet Explorer all the time. We send data to that thing that it just cannot understand and it tries to do things with it. And it actually works with unobtrusive JavaScript and progressive enhancement. As I said, an if-then element around something, a check before you send something to it, is totally fine. this looks beautiful and really cool. And it's basically, this is on Firefox 4 and Internet Explorer. This is just a text line and it works as well because the information is there. And that's what we should be starting to do. Just give the information in an HTML format with reloads in between the pages to Internet Explorer 6 and then leave it at that. And make a massive if statement around everything else we do and don't give it to that old browser because it chokes on it. Don't give it that backpack to run around in circles. You can do that even with HTML5 and all new technologies. That's called polyfills. Our systems that your JavaScript systems that you just put in. And then when you use, for example, WebSockets, it falls back to Flash sockets or Java sockets for Internet Explorer 6. So you can do that kind of development. You can use the new stuff and use a polyfill to translate it back to all the old browsers. It comes with it's a problem though for me, because should we really add extra code for legacy browsers? Should we say, okay, we need a library to support IE6 with the newest technology that it still doesn't understand and still doesn't look good on it and doesn't perform well on it? Or should we just say, okay, we don't give it to that. We give it something that works, something HTML, something reload of the page done. Because we used 90% of our time testing for old technology. And as soon as you put a polyfill in, you actually have a contract with your end users using these browsers that you say, hey, I'm supporting it for you, and it's going to be a good experience. It's not going to lock up your computer. You're not going to blue screen when you click on that video. And it means you have to test it for the browsers again. And I'm tired of testing old browsers. I'm tired of firing up a VM just to test a browser that I really didn't want to use anymore for years. And if you give people on IE6 that are locked into IE6 beautiful interfaces, that just confuses them. They're not used to beautiful interfaces. They're used to really, really bad things. So let's Internet Explorer retire. And even Microsoft said that right now with the IE6 countdown, which I asked you to put some code in your page and tell IE6 users to upgrade, which is a bit of fool's gold because XP users will be sent to the IE download page and the only XP browser of Internet Explorer is Internet Explorer 8. They can't upgrade to Internet Explorer 9. So that actually is not really a solution. And I wrote a long blog post about it if you want to hear a rant about it. But at least it's good that Microsoft realizes, like, I'm sorry, this thing has to die and we have to do something about it. And I said before, progressive enhancement works. This is the TV interface of Yahoo. And this just looks cool. It's like interactive. You roll over it. You see like the extra information about all the TV schedules and things. And if you turn off JavaScript, if you turn off CSS, not only JavaScript, this is what it looks like. It's an ordered list with the titles as links. And that makes sense on my BlackBerry. That makes sense on really old browsers. That makes sense everywhere. You put a bit of styling on there to not make it look completely terrible, and you're done. And you maintain the beautiful interface. You debug the beautiful interface. You test the beautiful interface and not the thing that nobody should be using anymore. And we're concentrating far too much on supporting old technology. The next thing we should be thinking about is automating annoying tasks. And that's a real problem that we have a few issues that we have to fix. And we shouldn't do that by hand. And everybody's really excited to fix things by hand right now. I found the way to make that HTML thing work and that HTML thing work. And it should be a build process really doing it for us. So for example, encoding worries. So I love that you had a UTF-8 encoding bug that we always have in websites on a cache machine. Encoding video is a bit of a pain in HTML5 right now because we have to support different browsers. We have to support different devices, different mobile phones. So you have to use MP4 for iOS devices and for Internet Explorer 9. You have to use Ogg Vorbis WebM Ogg Vorbis or WebM for all the other browsers. So in essence, you have to create at least 3 versions of the same video to support all the HTML5 browsers out there. And that's just not nice. That's just not what we should be doing. And that's why people don't switch from Flash to HTML5, because they say, like, why should I create the video 5 times and put it 5 times on my server? That's why, for example, Vidly, the service by encoding.com, which creates this URL for you, and when you upload a video, it generates 37 different versions of your video for you, which for all the mobile phones, for all the browsers, for all the consoles out there, and it has this short URL that you then use to basically redirect the application that you're using or the browser that you're using to the right video format. And that is just exactly what we needed. And what is that? That is basically seeing a problem, making a solution, and offering that solution. For now, it's free, but you can actually have a license for that to get better goodies. And this is how business is made right now. And this is what we should be thinking about. Solve problems of people and make a company around that. Find the issues. And especially accessibility in HTML5, there's lots of money to be made if you do it right. And we have to do that. And let's talk tomorrow about this, but I don't know if it's going to cover it, so I probably got him into hot water right now. Next thing is to build tools that help other build with new technology. Right now, every tutorial is like, oh, get your text editor out and start writing HTML5. And let's face it, most users don't want to write HTML by hand. That's why we have 12 years of history of content management systems. And not many people want to write hand code or know how to write hand code. I mean, that shows when you look at the web right now how many things are just completely wrong. And if you look at the content management systems that we have right now, most of them actually have XHTML output instead of HTML5 output. First of all, because HTML5 is new. And secondly, because it's much easier to create XHTML with an XML schema from an automated system because you have your unit testing already built in and these kind of things. But it's just not for the web anymore. Sorry, XHTML is dead, done. Don't bother anymore. And we have to start talking to all the content management systems, to all the blogging systems, to all the frameworks, to start supporting HTML5 output. And it's happening to a degree already, but if you build a PHP system that renders out stuff, take a look at boilerplate.html, use that as your main template and render it out and be part of that HTML5 thing in a few seconds. Please do that. We have to get this thing out there. And if people generate content, and even without realizing using HTML5, that's exactly where I want to go. Popcorn.js and butterapp.org are things sponsored by Mozilla. And it's actually really cool. That's exactly what my article on Smashing Mag is about today. So you have an interface how to sync content with a HTML5 video. So you have this like bar there that you had in Shockwave and in Flash for years. And that is all HTML5 running in the browser. So you can actually sync content with your video and then press a button and it creates a URL for you that you can send to your friends to have this show of video and time-synced content with it. And that's exactly what I want people to concentrate on and start building. Because we don't need people to write another HTML code by hand. We want them to build cool things that have clean code and modern code at the end. Aviary is a Photoshop for the web. This is HTML5 photo editing. I don't have, well, I still have Photoshop on this one, but when I just want to edit a quick image, I just upload it there, start editing it. All the filters that you have in Photoshop are available there. Save it out as a PNG and I'm done. I don't have to have all this software installed on my computer if I can use the web for that. Aloha Editor, so what you see is what you get editor that actually generates HTML5 instead of random things that might render correctly in browsers, like most what you see is what you get editors do. And it's open source, you can pop it in, you're done. The last thing is I want you to be part of that discussion, because nobody likes mimes, really nobody. There's no problem being on that mailing list and bitching. There's no problem saying somebody from Google is not right. There's no problem with saying like, hey, this is all great that you're discussing video formats, but I have a financial client that needs a form that works. Why isn't that in the HTML5 spec? Be part of the discussion and start actually requesting stuff that makes sense. And it's not a popularity contest. It's not that everything that comes from a Mozilla, a Microsoft, a Google, or Apple employee is gold, and everything else doesn't mean anything. So people who are on stage say a lot of stupid things as well. I do, other people do as well. And you might have that one idea that moves the HTML5 spec forward, where we've been running in circles for the last 3 weeks because we all thought too hard about the subject matter, rather than like, why don't you do that? So just being popular doesn't make you happy. I mean, look at this girl. She's actually quite, it represents popularity, but it didn't work out for her. I want you to listen, and listen well. I want you to, even if you don't want to be part of the HTML5 discussion, at least be on that mailing list and flag up a few things and realize what's coming, what's going down the line. Because that's where things happen before they end up on TechCrunch and CNET and all the other things. So there's a good listening skill is something we need. A lot of developers don't have listening skills. They just implement before they listen to something. So if you've got a good listener and a good reader, just go on these mailing lists and come out there. There's no more secrets. This was in my street, there's just a new pub opening and they have a secret garden. How secret is it if you advertise it? But We don't have any secrets in HTML5 because it's open. It's all out there. The spec can be looked at. The spec can be changed. You can comment on it. And this is something we didn't have before. So one thing also, keep your eyes peeled on newer technology. Look out there what's coming next around the corner. The next thing for me, and okay, we're not ready with the HTML5 thing yet, but the next thing for me is the device APIs. Why can't I use my camera in HTML5 as an input device? Why can't I use my microphone as an input device? And this is what we're working on right now. I would love to go to my computer, look into it, I'm logged in. Why not? That can be done, and the technology is there, but we haven't quite specified yet how to do that and what to do with it. Instead, we just use chat roulette. So there's cool new technology coming out, and always keep on the go, because if you're a web developer, you always have to move. You cannot hold back. One thing about that made my whole career was being hungry for the newest stuff and playing with it. And when you see, when you go to conference right now and you see 17-year-old CSS developers using the newest shit in every browser that I didn't touch because I thought it will not work in ever, and they build this interface and they look beautiful and work, and you're like, wow, I just realized I'm getting old and I don't want to do this stuff, but I should. And everybody should be hungry to use new technology all the time. So we can and should supercharge the web right now, because it is the platform. It is the infrastructure. Instead of building another piece of software on top of the infrastructure, we can use the infrastructure to innovate the interfaces that we have and make people's day-to-day life easier. And that is our job as web developers. It's not bringing out a product that we get money for. It's to make it easier to pay your taxes. It's to make it easier to find a video of a monkey falling over. It's whatever you want to do on the web. The end user is who you build for, not for yourself, not for your client, not for your boss. But if something on the web is out there that sucks for whatever reason, it just goes back to you because you're the guy getting blamed. As web developer, I always get the blame no matter what happens. I had like database errors on the page, and who do they ask? The HTML guy to fix it. How? You know, but you're the guy that pays that builds the visual interface, so you're the one that has to fix things. So Godspeed, let's do this, let's go for it, let's really, really embrace the web and build with the web and on the web and use these new technologies because you can. And if there's things that break, feedback, because all the communication channels are actually open. And that is all I had, so let's start drinking. Thank you very much.